Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
I mean, she can solve problems.
Yes.
She's a problem solver.
Okay, I'm good.
I did that literally like 5 seconds before we came back. State Representative Jillian Gilchrist in studio, candidate for the Democratic nomination in the CT1, John Larson's district. There's a lot of challengers. There's a lot of challenges to talk about today. Do you want to start? Like, we have sort of like national issues. We have the campaign, then we have state issues. Where would you like to start?
I'm fine starting with national issues.
Okay. So then I'll ask you the biggest question, which is how would, in your opinion, when you view your party, mm-hmm. and I'm unaffiliated, I'm a split ticket voter, I am not a Republican, I am not a Democrat, but the party nationally is kind of broken.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is sort of the way to start to dig the party out?
I think we need new leadership. When you look at who is serving, they've been there a long time. And I think we...
Like the Schumers of the world?
Yes. I don't think these positions were intended to be forever. And I think what we're seeing is that old way of leadership isn't working. And so we need people with new ideas, with new ways of leading, because you just have an old way of doing politics that doesn't work anymore. And that tension is playing out before our very eyes.
So, okay, there's one angle is new leadership. What about like political philosophy? Like what does the Democratic Party, like, can you give me a thesis statement about what the party stands for?
No, at this point in time, when you look at the national leadership, because I think, unfortunately, the Democrats in Congress on a whole are beholden to the same special interests that the Republican Party are beholden to. And so I think there's too much money in politics right now, and that's what's leading this nation. And so there's a frustration because Democrats will speak a good game about healthcare or economic inequality or public education. But at the end of the day, people aren't seeing the investment in those things, and they're not seeing their lives get better. And so it's a lot of talk and no action.
Okay, so it brings me to two questions. Number one is just on that whole thematic element. How do you view, like, as a Democrat, how do you view being a Democrat? What does that mean to you personally?
So to me personally, being a Democrat means using the government to make people's lives better.
The government, as a force for good.
Yes. Yeah. We all pay in. We pay our taxes. And the government should be there to solve problems and make life easier for us. And so that's where I'd like to see us go. And right now, I don't think the people we've elected are listening to the needs of the everyday people and taking any kind of action that would make life better for folks.
Okay, so take the shutdown. We're talking with State Representative Jillian Gilchrist, again, who's running for the Democratic nomination in the 1st Congressional District, which has been occupied by John Larson for, you know, nearly three decades. If you were dealing with this, and again, as a member of Congress, you're one of 435, actually in the House, one of 435, one of 535 in total, don't have a lot of you don't have a lot of power to do much, but what would you be advocating? And this is in the Senate now, but like, how would you be handling this as a representative in Congress?
I'd be speaking more clearly to the everyday person. So as I see it, in terms of SNAP, for example, that's a big topic right now because come Saturday,
right,
360,000 people in the state of Connecticut are going to be cut off SNAP. The big, beautiful bill, HR 1 that passed this summer, decimated SNAP. So that proposal is the Republicans. We're now in a shutdown. There is a reserve fund for SNAP that the Republicans won't tap into. We should be pushing as Democrats, and we should have been for the last month, to tap into that reserve fund because we knew the government wasn't going to reopen in time.
But the Republicans say open the government, then we'll deal with that.
But if the Republicans are the very party who cut SNAP in their big, beautiful bill, why why would they want to open the government? Like, they're blaming the Democrats, but they're the very ones who cut the program that we're arguing about right now.
So SNAP is one thing, and we've got, you know, the governor is giving $3 million, which is not nearly enough, obviously. And then there's even some Republicans are saying if you're on SNAP, you need to go find a job. I mean, we've seen these kind of these arguments. But, you know, the other element is healthcare. And I'm curious because to me, both, like if you're on SNAP benefits, Saturday is going to be a cliff. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you can maybe recognize the problem. But unless you're in that situation, it's hard to relate. Right. Healthcare, I find it to be the term itself is I gloss over. I pay way too much. I have three kids. Our premiums are high and we still have huge deductibles to hit. I can't stand our system. Right. But I feel like the message about the, you know, with the subsidies, I feel like it doesn't resonate. And like, and again, it's just a citizen. When I hear like, oh, you're going to lose your healthcare, this, it seems so vague and amorphous. It doesn't connect with me. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious if there's a messaging issue or like, is there a different way to do it to make this potential problem more relatable?
And I think where that's coming from is even with the subsidy, healthcare is too expensive. So to me, it's about taking profit out of healthcare. And I think that message
might... So you're a single payer supporter type thing.
Anything that gets us to a place where healthcare is affordable for folks and they can access the care they need. And with profit driving healthcare, that model was never going to work because the only way for that model to work is for insurance companies not to provide the care. They're going to make more money when they don't have to actually pay for the care. So we need to get profit out of healthcare. So yes, I'm about universal healthcare.
So for me, I mean, we have to take a break. So this is, I mean, this is an issue that has not been solved and it's been decades and decades. I do think healthcare is a right and not a privilege. I'm not sure I want the government running it. That's my problem. I don't disagree with you. I think it should be affordable and accessible, if not everybody, by way more. But I'm not sure that I want the government in that business. So, like, I mean, I'm so torn on it because I understand what you're saying. We're back with Jillian Gilchrist, state representative out of West Hartford and candidate for the 1st Congressional District for the Democratic nomination. So November 12th, you go back for special session. And, I know that some of the stuff I'm going to ask you, it isn't directly involve your committee work. But do you know what's going to be covered or is that something you're waiting to hear about?
We're waiting to hear. There's rumors out there, but the call for the special session hasn't been released yet, and that'll be listed in there.
So what is your sense that they'll try to do?
There's talk that we will have some kind of housing proposal, and then there's many of us pushing for the establishment of an emergency fund, and then we would allocate some funds for things that have been cut by the federal government.
Right. So that's that no more than $500 million conversation that's
yes.
been on. And then the housing, we had Ritter on and he intimated that there's been progress made. And then there's obviously, you know, the Republicans came back on that $500 million, so we should cut taxes. And then there's, of course, like PURA stuff. But let's talk about, before we get to the $500 million, the housing thing. Did you vote for it?
I did.
Okay. So do you have any idea, since you're not involved in those negotiations, what is being haggled over that might make it are the Republicans going to vote against it no matter what type thing? Or is this you're just designing it to get something that Lamont will sign?
I believe the negotiation is between the Democrats and Lamont
okay.
at this point in time. And I'm not part of those conversations. We're going to have a House Democratic Caucus next week where we will hash that out. So I'm not familiar with what they have come to an agreement on.
Did you think the criticism, and there are two fronts, I've learned a lot about this. One is, you know, there's a lot of not in my backyard or, you know, municipalities didn't want to be dictated to, no matter what they say, it felt to them like it would be something that was dictated to them. The other part of it was like rural towns don't have infrastructure to do this. So, I mean, what do you think could be done to make it better?
I think having more community conversations would have been better. To actually explain what was in the bill and to hear that feedback. I think there were a lot of conversations at the legislature amongst leaders to get to that bill we voted on. But now having traveled around the 1st Congressional District, I am hearing the same concerns. And I just don't think the time was taken to bring the conversation into the communities.
So do you think you think it was a messaging thing? You think if the bill had passed and been signed that some of those concerns were overdone?
I think some of those concerns were overdone. It's my understanding that the bill we voted on did take into consideration the needs of rural communities and did give people a lot of different communities the ability to structure it the way they want it.
Okay. And so we'll find out on the 12th and the 13th. The other thing is the $500 million. I mean, you agree it's probably not possible to fill all the gaps.
Correct.
By the federal shortfall. So how do we prioritize? How do we pick? It's not like picking winners and losers, but you are picking some things are going to get some support and others are going to be really struggling.
Yes. To me, that's the second piece, right? Like we need the money to be able to even have that conversation. I think the legislature is well positioned to make those decisions in partnership with the governor's office because legislators are out in the community hearing from folks.
So you don't have to change the guardrails or anything. You can just pass a bill that says we're taking no more than $500 million, putting it from the volatility money, and we're putting it into a special fund to do X or Y.
Yes, it's my understanding that that money hasn't been put towards the pension debt yet, and so it's kind of just sitting out there. And so it could be put into a special new emergency fund that would fall outside those parameters.
Why not just use the rainy day fund?
Well, I would be open to that. The governor would have to declare an emergency, so that really falls on him to make that decision. To me, it is raining, so I don't know why we're not using the rainy day.
It just seems that the rainy day fund has become like an untouchable, like sort of buffer, right?
I agree.
And I'm not against. I want the state to be fiscally, you know, secure or what have you. But it's strange. Like what would constitute a rainy day?
I'm waiting because again, with food being cut off come this weekend, to me it's raining for people. I don't know what it's going to take.
Are you concerned at all about sort of starting to chip away at the 2017 agreement that sort of got the state back in order?
I see it. No, because...
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again, but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Because I think we need to reevaluate that. The way that was decided, it was during a really difficult time, and we've learned that the numbers that were used to make that determination aren't accurate. We should more look at the five-year average. And so I'm open to going back in and figuring out a model that works better for the state. It's not an all or nothing to me. I think we just need to work on it.
Yeah. And maybe the volatility is a bad word because it hasn't been that volatile.
No.
It's been pretty consistent.
Yes.
In terms of what it's produced in terms of surpluses and so on. We're back with Jillian Gilchrist again, state rep out of West Hartford and a Democratic candidate in the 1st Congressional District here. A bunch of campaign questions. First of all, just generally, I mean, this is your first foray into something like this. And how's it going?
It's going good. Each day is an adventure, meeting lots of interesting people and learning quite a bit.
So fundraising numbers came out and, you know, seven figures for Luke Bronin and John Larson. And I think you were under six figures. Mm-hmm. And talk about that side of things. And what is the challenge for you?
So first and foremost, I think it's unfortunate that candidate viability is determined at this point by the political elite on how much you can raise.
It's certainly a big factor. It's not fully determinant, yep. But it is a big factor.
Yes. And then I do recognize I need money to run a successful campaign. But I was never going to have $800,000 in 2 days. And as a non-incumbent, I don't have access, nor do I want access to corporate PACs. And so I'm taking it day by day, month by month. I have a goal in mind, and I see it as a marathon, not a sprint. So I'm raising the money.
So in terms of being an ongoing concern, you know, in terms of getting to the convention, and you know, how confident are you that you can, first of all, forget about like getting on the ballot, like getting to the convention. Are you confident you can stay in the race long enough to do that?
Yes, okay. I am confident.
And what about getting on the ballot?
Yes, I run to win. And so I am trying for the 15% at the convention, which you need to get onto the ballot. And if I don't get that, I would petition.
So we have a bunch of, you know, listen, the station, especially after 9 o'clock, it leans right. But we have a lot, especially in the morning, we have a diverse amount of listeners here. And I'm just curious, you know, it's a lot of people know, you know, Mayor Bronin from his two terms in Hartford, and John Larson's been around for, you know, more than 25 years. How do you distinguish yourself from those two?
So I'm a social worker turned legislator. I've been in the Connecticut General Assembly for 7 years. This is my fourth term. And I'm very skilled at doing advocacy, bringing folks together, building coalitions, and pushing for policy. And I've been successful. I co-chair the Reproductive Rights Caucus. I've worked on paid family and medical leave. I've increased wages for workers who work with folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so my thing is I go out and listen to people, learn from their experiences, and then I'm effective at translating that into public policy. And I think that's the type of leadership we need now down in D.C.
So, by the way, and just, you know, we have Larson as the incumbent. You have yourself and Luke Bronin, Ruth Fortune on the school board in Hartford, and Jack Perry from Southington are also in it. We just don't know. You know, we haven't talked to Ruth or Jack in a bit, but we'll be efforting them. And we'll have Luke Bronin on sometime in November. And at minimum, we'll talk with Congressman Larson on Thanksgiving, although we're working on getting him in studio for a longer stretch of time. In terms of, like, meeting people and talking to people, like, what has been, because you do the same thing when you try to run for re-election in your district, like, what's been different, or what's different about parts of the district that's not like West Hartford?
Yeah, it's very different. I mean, this district goes to Colebrook, to Windsor, out to Portland. And yet, at the end of the day, cost of living really is the number one issue impacting people across the first congressional. Healthcare is a major concern and is impacting people on a daily basis. Have met small business owners who are going to have to leave their small business. That's been very successful because they can't afford the healthcare. So concerns do vary, but on a whole, people just want to be able to live their lives, and it shouldn't be as hard as it is.
What do you do? You just go like, do you go door to door? Do you make a phone? Like, how do you actually do it?
So I've been doing a playground tour. I've been out on Saturday mornings in different towns, meeting with folks on the playground so that they could bring
their
kids.
And you just like go up, you have a cup of coffee in one hand, you're like, you know, I'm Jillian Gilchrist.
Yep, and we extend an invitation ahead of time as well, so people have been coming. Then we also have been meeting people at coffee shops. And then I've been outdoor knocking with municipal candidates. Reminder, big election on Tuesday. Yeah, just going up and meeting and listening. I think that's the social worker in me. I introduce myself, but then I really do want to hear from folks. What are their concerns and what would they like to see in a congressperson?
And you have you don't make speeches in the same way that a statewide candidate, but do you have like a stump? Like, have you worked out, you got your whole routine going?
Yep, I've got a thing. Not at the playground though. That really is just conversation. But if I'm going to a Democratic town committee, yes. I have a little speech prepared.
So you have to go town by town to try to get the town committee to support you, correct?
Yep.
And that's the even more difficult because a lot of them have known Larson forever. Like, in terms of the network, the establishment network, is that hard, difficult to crack, or you find open-mindedness?
You'd be surprised. As I'm traveling the 27 towns in the first congressional district, there is a sense amongst established Democrats, those in Democratic town committees, that it is time for change. And there's a great deal of respect for the congressman, But people feel like we need to be doing things differently in Washington.
By the way, East Hartford's in your district, right?
Yes, it is.
And, you know, we're going to be there tomorrow morning at a place called the Square Peg.
Okay.
It's on it's 130 Long Hill Street. And we do this thing called darting across Connecticut, where if you see that map right there, we throw a dart at that map wherever it lands.
You go.
Yeah. I wanted to go to Windsor, so I go to Dom's, but I missed. I hit East Hartford, which we're psyched to do. We've done like 30 of them. And people will come visit us tomorrow morning, even you. I don't know if you have to declare it, but they're giving 50% off for breakfast.
Ooh.
the whole show.
Okay.
At the Square Peg in East Hartford. Tomorrow morning is parting our darting across Connecticut. We're talking with Jillian Gilchrist, who, of course, is a state rep from West Hartford and a candidate for CT1, the Democratic nomination for John Larson's seat. He's being primaried by four other people, which is kind of incredible. But I want to get back to the time for a change thing, because the pushback on that is, okay, that's a good argument, but what is going to change? And so specifically about John Larson, what do you think you'll do differently than John Larson has done or not done?
So I think when candidates are funded by corporate interests, they are less inclined to push for policies that reflect the full scope of need.
And you think that's what he's done?
He is funded in large part by special interests. And so I don't think he's pushed as hard as he should for policies, in particular healthcare. And so that's one piece. I also don't think he's been present in the 27 towns. And so as a legislator and then as a congressperson, it's, again, continuing to go out and listen to folks, speak with them about why the policies I'm working on would be a solution to a problem, getting feedback from folks, and then pushing for that change, engaging them so that they can be part of that process. And I don't think he's done that piece. We all know him for Social Security, which is an incredibly important issue, but you need to be pushing for more than just one thing.
Yeah, or get a vote on that one thing, which has been my constructive criticism on that particular point. You listen, you're a mother of two teenagers, and you work for a living, you know, independently wealthy, and you are a pretty proactive person in the state legislature. Why do you want to do this? What compelled you to throw your life on its head?
I'm really driven by injustice and by trying to improve things. And so to me, if I can get down to Congress and work to make things better for folks for as long as I can, then it's turning around and saying, and who's next? Again, I don't think these are seats meant to sit in for years and years and years. And I think that's why we're in the place we're in this country. And so to me, I just have this sense of urgency to make it better for folks. And so that's why I'm doing it.
Jillian Gilchrist, again, state rep from West Hartford, running for the Democratic nomination in the 1st Congressional District. First of all, thank you.
Thank you.
It's really good to have the conversation. We'll continue it with the other candidates as well. We'll see you tomorrow morning at the Square Peg in East Hartford.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.